The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host of the show. The Giants and the Cowboys played a football game. We had ghosts last week, a cat this week. We'll get to that in a second. Reminder, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. If you like it, if you're new, if you're old, if you've been doing this forever and you've never left a review, pop on there and leave a five-star. Write something nice or ask us a question. If you leave a five-star review with a question for any member of the podcast, whether it's the Super Friends, who are on tonight, Brady Quinn, Jason Lockenfora, Pete Prisco, RJ White, whatever it's about, fantasy, gambling, life advice, you can ask Sean what's going on with his dating life, who he likes to date, what type of people he likes to date. We will answer the question. And if you just want to leave something nice and say you love the podcast, that's great too. Sean Wagner McGuff, John Breach, Ryan Wilson, what's up, fellas?
Sean strikes me as a guy who would totally date a woman who owns a lot of cats. So I feel like he was pretty pumped to see the cat on the field tonight.
I'm actually a little bit allergic to cats, so I would have to be really into the girl to be able to stomach that.
Is that like a little bit pregnant? How does a little bit allergic work?
It's like, so one of my good friends, he had a bunch of cats growing up. No, it's just like I can go over there and be fine, but like if I'm like sitting around there for a while and I like touch my eye on accident, then my eye gets super itchy and red. I can be in the house, but I can't like touch my eye and stuff.
That's I'm allergic. You know what? That's almost as thrilling as Kevin Harlan's Westwood One call of the cat being on the field.
Oh, he's at the five. He's walking. He's walking to the three. He's at the two. And the cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW people who get it now, a policeman, a state troopers come on the field, and the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown. And the cat is elusive, kind of like Barkley and Elliott.
And then he said, then the cat left through the tunnel. It was actually escorted out. I don't know if you guys caught this.
Escorted out.
But did you see, like, the security lady, like, just waved her arm. It was like, go on through. She, like he was like he was a person just walking through. This
obvious nimbly, cat lady.
All nimbly bimbly, like.
I mean, as our official cat correspondent, I will say it was pretty amazing to see that, because you would expect some security guy to have to come over and pick the cat up and physically escort it off the field. But that's not what happened in this case. As Brinson just said, that thing just walked off the field like it knew exactly where it was going, like it was heading to the locker room, like it was going back to the concession stand to take a few tequila shots, because the cat was a little wobbly.
It's almost like this was a planned demonstration by the NFL, knowing that they got, you know, a little bit of a dud of a game, officiating controversies every week. Let's liven things up with an animal. And it, like you said, Breach, it knew where to run. It ran right off, no problem. Everyone loved it. You know, Ryan loves his conspiracy theories. I'm not so sure this was an accident.
Also, that cat, that was a well-fed cat. That wasn't like a stray cat wandering out, like desperately looking for food. He was like thick, muscular, night. Looked like he'd been eating some good food. And Jerry Jones said after the game, according to David Hellman of DallasCowboys.com, Jerry just ducked out of the locker room, saw the media assembled, and pointed down the hall. In that cage over there, that's my cat. He was so mean out there, I didn't want to look at him on the field.
Jerry's that cat had a better night than Saquon Barkley.
Well, I'll tell you what, that cat actually spurred John Breach. A pretty good run by the Cowboys, didn't it?
I mean, if you're Jerry Jones, for instance, I think you had a theory that maybe Jerry Jones hired the cat to run on the field, which would all make sense, because before the cat came out, the Giants were winning the game 9-3. And then after the cat terrorized and just scared everyone on the Giants sideline, the Cowboys outscored the Giants 34-9 for the rest of the game. So the cat was the MVP of the game for the Cowboys.
And for those for people who aren't math majors out there, that means the final was 37, Cowboys 37, Giants 18. Pat Shurmur, you're a coward, my friend. Pat Shurmur kicked four field goals shorter than 30 yards in primetime as a 2-6 home on 7-point home underdog. You are a coward.
I think you are a fool for calling him a coward because you're surprised that he would do that. He does it every week. And look, here's what I was thinking when I was watching that piece of doo-doo game, at least from the Giants' perspective.
I thought it was an entertaining game.
No, the way the Giants played the game. Okay. That's what – yeah, no, I thought the Cowboys looked pretty good in the second half after the cat ran out there. But I think if you and we talk about this every week, if your coach isn't Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, John Harbaugh, Peterson, Frank Reich, you need to tell yourself – this is going to go badly more times than not. There are going to be a lot of stupid decisions. You're going to compound that with horrible officiating, and your team isn't going to win a lot of football games. They might go to the playoffs one year, but if you're comfortable not winning the Super Bowl as an owner or GM, then you hire one of these people that make play calls consistently like Pat Shurmur does, because you're not going to win games like that. If he were coaching the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Patriots, they would be bad football teams because he makes stupid decisions. So I think if you accept – as a fan, or just quit watching or get a new team or something, that if this is my coach, this is what's going to happen week in, week out. Maybe it's a better experience for you. Maybe you find something else to do for 4 hours on the weeknights and 8 hours on the weekends. But it's frustrating. You're right. He's a coward, but it's not going to change. Nothing will change what he's doing. And I have one question for Sean or whoever wants to answer this. Next week, the Giants play the Jets. Is there any scenario where both Adam Gase and Pat Shurmur get fired after that game?
I think our
both?
Was it Kevin Steinmo or Nick Costas? I can't remember. I follow too many Giants fans. Kevin Steinmo, our editor, Nick Costas, friend of the program, former coworker, pointed out that it was like they should wrestle at midfield, Gase and Shurmur, and the loser should leave town, and so should the winner.
Yeah, nice. Well played. I'll take Shurmur in that fight, and they can both leap together.
I mean, Shurmur would kick Gase's ass.
Yeah.
Shurmur's big.
Are you kidding me? Have you ever seen Gase's bugly eyes? He goes full bug eye at you. You have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, but Gase won't be well rested. He'll be too tired heading into it. So,
Reach, you can't look at him. That's the only thing. You have to keep your eyes closed while you fight.
Well, I was going to say about Pat Shurmur is it goes beyond the situational decisions. And look, as soon as they kicked the field goal on that first drive after they picked off Dak Prescott in the first play of the game, got to the 3-yard line and kicked the field goal. I knew as soon as that happens, you just know they're going to lose because you can't settle for 3 in that situation. When you're an underdog, that's big. But the thing about him, it's the same with Adam Gase and Sam Darnold. Daniel Jones isn't looking better. And I know he's a rookie. I'm not saying this means Daniel Jones is going to suck forever and all that, but when the Giants are evaluating what they want to do moving forward with their head coach, the first thing they have to look at is how has Daniel Jones looked in an offensive coach's system. He is not getting better. I thought this game was so doo-doo, as Ryan said, in large part because of Daniel Jones. He fumbled again. I think that's now 8 fumbles already. And how many starts is he? Like 5 or 6 starts already?
7.
Through another interception. Again,
he had 2 fumbles, right? Including the,
yes, because at the end, I forgot about
the end. In the words of, Scott Van Pelt, that was overwhelming on the final, you're aware that the final play that the Cowboys ran puts the second half over the full game total over. So it was a pretty big play.
Let me put the fumbles in perspective real quick. He now has 10 on the season, which is tied for the second most in the NFL, and 16 turnovers overall, which is tied with Jameis Winston for the most in the NFL.
Look, he was so bad that Booger at one point had to compliment his slide after a scramble. He said, that was the best slide I've seen him make all season long, which is like, look, if we're getting to that point, you know you're searching for a way to compliment a quarterback. He also, by the way, hilariously tried to block for his runner on a reverse and got completely demolished. And it's like, yeah, look, just get down. Like, you're the franchise quarterback. You don't need to be trying that. You're going to get rocked every single time.
Can I point something out quickly? It's like, I like Daniel Jones. I know. I just want to be polite. I'm like, when Breach says, he says something similar.
He says one thing real quick.
It's literally a podcast where we all point things out constantly for like.
It's a way in which to notify my colleagues I'm about to talk. Sean just bursts in, interrupts, and doesn't quit talking for 40 minutes.
You know what? I'm gonna give Sean credit here. Sean has good nonverbal cues to let you know he's diving in.
I don't ever look at Sean though. That's my problem.
Yeah, that's your problem.
He's not easy on the eyes. So I'm gonna be honest with you. Oh my God, look at Sean.
Sean, that was my Adam Gase impression.
Yeah, that was a great Adam Gase impression.
Adam Gase ain't easy on his own eyes.
Yeah. So here's the deal. And this happened after Daniel Jones went off in his first start. Who did he beat? Was it the Bucks he whipped up on? Whatever game it was.
He whipped up on him. He's down big and he stormed back.
Yeah, so after that game, because Daniel Jones had taken a lot of crap going back to April, and understandably so, Giants fans are frustrated. A lot of angry Giants fans went on Twitter and just started calling everyone out, and I wish we could live in a world where people would quit tweeting. That certainly aged poorly. Like, I hate that because it's so stupid, because an hour later, it's not going to matter. 2 hours later, it's not going to matter. And now we've seen over the course of the last six or seven starts or whatever, that as Sean pointed out, Jones has been terrible.
It's going back and forth like nine times.
And here's the thing. I don't want to hate Daniel Jones, but you get so angry reading people on Twitter yelling at you about something that you said in April. Maybe I should be off Twitter less, and that's probably advice all of us could take, but I just think that it sort of skews the whole thing. Daniel Jones is probably going to be fine. He plays for a terrible coach. He makes terrible decisions. He had a good start. He has his up and downs. I mean, he's playing better than the other quarterback in New York. That makes you feel any better. But, yeah, he played terribly tonight. I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it means that I should say that that aged poorly for people who were yelling at me about it the first start and vice versa. So I just want to put that out there because it's super annoying, and I'm sure we'll have to deal with it for the rest of the season.
No, I mean, I think part of the problem with Twitter is that we have this league in the NFL in which we overreact every single week and every single game. Like, you know, Dak Prescott was not mentioned as an MVP candidate coming into tonight, primarily because he'd been on a bye. Like, he's still right there with the other guys. I don't think he's necessarily lumped in the big three, but like, if somebody's on a bye, we just forget about them and they're not even like mentioned. And then if Daniel Jones has a great game, it's people seeking out all these tweets criticizing him to blast you for him. And if he has a bad game, it's like people seeking out the tweets that criticize the people's tweets to criticize them. And then like, if he has a good game, it's like it's just constantly going back and forth. It's like, and look, we're doing 10 podcasts a week, so I don't expect to not be part of the cycle here. But at some point, you need to let it breathe a little bit. And that's the case with Daniel Jones. The problem is that the Giants stink, and they're 2-7, and they're not going – like he's showing flashes, but do we trust Pat Shurmur to build to coach him up? Do we trust – Dave Gettleman to build around him? Do we trust the Giants ownership to keep Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur in place if they're the right guys in order to, you know, construct this ecosystem around Daniel Jones? I think that's the problem. Like, they traded away Odell Beckham, which maybe in hindsight, not the worst thing in the world. You know, they've given him some protection, but they paid Nate Solder. He didn't do a very good job blocking today. Will Hernandez got in like 12 fights. Tank Lawrence was up in his grill all night long. I mean, it's just a hard game to judge him on.
And Will Hernandez somehow got in 12 fights and didn't get flagged a single time, even though there's, I think, at least four penalties thrown during Will Hernandez fights.
By the way, that one, Will Hernandez. No, you're right. The last one too, by the way, because it was going to be, I want to say it was going to be fourth and long, and the Giants were going to have to punt. And Hernandez draws the flag. They get 15 yards. That sets up the play with the fumble and the Cowboys take it the other way. So like, if they punt, I mean, the Cowboys are taking knees. I mean, it was just going to be a mercy, like, punt here, take the ball. We're done here. I mean, Shermer's a coward anyway.
I do want to note that this defense that completely shut down this Giants offense and Daniel Jones is the same defense that hasn't been frankly that good this year. So it wasn't like, Daniel Jones was going up against his top 10 defense. He was going up against, I think, a defense kind of in the middle, but maybe on the bottom end of the middle, that a couple weeks ago, Sam Darnold actually played very well against. Yeah. So this wasn't like some impossible matchup for him. Like, I actually thought, I think I said this on our YouTube look ahead, that I thought this might be a bit of a shootout because I didn't think the Cowboys defense was any good. So I think that's what is also a little bit disappointing about how poorly he played.
Yeah, and if you look at it, I guess they were tied in the second quarter in this game, tied in the third quarter, and then the Cowboys scored three touchdowns, 21-3. They outscored the Giants in the fourth quarter of this game. And like, you could really tell, in week one, I remember too, like, you know, the Giants, I think, scored first in that game. Evan Engram called a touchdown pass in the first quarter from Eli. And then Blake Jarwin caught a touchdown pass. And then the Cowboys scored two quick times before the half. And then just kind of put it on cruise control. Like, to me, this is simply a case of a Dallas Cowboys team that, you know, like it or not, for narrative purposes, given the way that the Giants have won Super Bowls recently, the Cowboys are simply just in a better spot right now. They're a better overall franchise. They're better on both sides of the ball. And they've covered and beaten the crap out of the Giants in like their last six games. I mean, this is a team that flexes their muscles on the Giants. And as much as we don't like Jason Garrett, the Cowboys are actually pretty good in the division with Jason Garrett. So
they have been dominating the division, absolutely. But here's the thing is that if somebody wakes up and just looks at this score and sees 37-18, it screams Cowboys blowout. When that wasn't the case at all, you can almost say this game really came down to two plays with 8 minutes left. 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So 8 minutes left in the game, the score was 23-18 Cowboys. This is a five-point game. The Cowboys were facing a 3rd and 12 from their own or from the Giants' 45-yard line. If the Giants get a stop there and the Cowboys have to punt, you're down five, you have the ball, it's a game changer. But instead of getting a stop, Giants secondary gets burnt for a 45-yard touchdown pass on 3rd and 12 that made the score 30-18 and really end it. And then obviously the Cowboys tacked on another touchdown when our boy DJ fumbled it on a quarterback hit, and then the Cowboys returned that first score. So that, you know, the game was over at that point. But because it was so close, it goes back to what Sean was talking about earlier. Like, what was Pat Shurmur thinking just kicking all these field goals? If you look at where they had, Sean mentioned the very first field goal where they got down to the 3-yard line. You don't need to kick a field goal from the 3-yard line. Two of their other field goals came on 4th and 5 from inside the 10-yard line. And if it's under 4th and 5, you're already that close, go for it. There was only one field goal I thought was excusable, and it was the 4th and 10 one. But that came on the same drive where he challenged a pass interference call. So that negates any goodwill he gets for kicking that field goal. I just thought it just was a poorly coached game for Pat Shurmur, and his team almost bailed him out because they did play so well for about 3.5 quarters.
Yeah, the first field goal, remember the very first play from scrimmage, Dak throws an interception. I mean, like, it was like, whoa, all right, the dog's going to win tonight. Like, the home team's going to hold serve. And then 4 plays, 5 yards, 1 minute and 26 seconds later, after Saquon Barkley just smashed into a brick wall, I think 3 times. Maybe they ran Daniel Jones on a bootleg too, I think. It was like terrible red zone play calling. Like, well, we got to kick this 21-yard field goal. It's like, no! Like, just let it be 0-0 if you have to, but get 6 points. Get the 6 points. You got a free interception from a surprisingly defensive performance on a bad throw by Dak. Get the 6 points. They just didn't want to do it.
And then another one, it was 23-15. Daniel Jones throws a 65-yard, well, it was a screen pass, but it went for 65 yards.
I was going to say.
To Saquon Barkley. And so that put the Giants down on the Cowboys' 11-yard line. If they get a touchdown, a 2-point conversion, the game is tied with like 10 minutes left. But what did they do after getting that 65-yard pass down to the Cowboys' 11-yard line? They gained 0 yards. Zero. And then went and straight and kicked the field goal, never scored again. It was over. So, I mean, it was really.
Wait, is that the, this says it was a 6-second drive. Is that right? That can't be possible. 8 plays, 44 yards, 6 seconds.
No, it's not possible. 5 plays, 65 yards, 50 seconds.
I like how you asked us if that was real. If they ran an 8-play, 44-yard drive in 6 seconds.
I love that Breach makes it sound like a touchdown and a 2-point conversion is the easiest thing in the world for Pat Shurmur to do. There's a better chance that they run for 0 yards on every play for the rest of the season than they can.
By the way, shout out to friend of the program, frequent contributor, Tom Frenelli. He did today's top picks, hashtag trust the process. His picks were 1, Cowboys -6.5, 2, Amari Cooper to score a touchdown, 3, over Saquon Barkley receiving yards. All three of those cashed. Make sure and read Tom. He does today's top picks like 3 or 4 times. Chip and I used to do them. We got bailed out because we do so many podcasts. So go read Tom doing this. These drive charts are weird on NFL. Jesus, I don't know what's happening. There's like,
I'm not reading CBSSports.com. That's weird. By the way, I'll just say the same thing about the Cowboys that I said.
This is the NFL stats and information feed for the NFL media.
Okay. Do what you got to do. But,
it seems like it's working real well for you.
Yeah. But I will say the same thing.
The power of CBS is thing, so F off.
Okay, I know. I will say the same thing about the Cowboys that I said about the Giants. If you're happy just winning the division, then Jason Garrett's your guy. But I would imagine Jerry Jones, and he's made this clear, that as someone in his mid-70s, he wants to win Super Bowls. Jason Garrett is not going to do that for you. So no amount of wishing is going to make that true. No amount of beating up on Pat Shurmur and Daniel Jones is going to make that true. This team will be disappointing because Jason Garrett, in large part, makes his team disappointing. Great win. not taking that away from on Monday night, but they played a terrible team.
Terrible.
And
I like terrible.
Two more things worth mentioning. One, I thought Leonard Williams played pretty well.
Is he worth a third round pick and whatever else?
Oh, no.
Of course not. And, you know, if they let him walk, then they'll get a compensatory pick. If they sign, I mean, look, no, but he looked good. Like, he was disruptive. He and Dexter Lawrence could be a interesting disruptive force on the interior. They just have to add a pass rusher.
I think they're going to sign him to a long-term deal.
Yeah, they are. Dave Gettleman signing a pass rusher to a long-term deal, please. Yeah. Look, that's how he built, that's how he got Carolina's defense really rolling with Kawan Short and Star Lotulelei. So I expect him to do the same thing with Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence. I think those two are an interesting combo, but you got to add presence on the outside. If you can do that, good for him.
Well, they tried really hard to get Anthony Barr, and Anthony Barr agreed to go in the tampering period, and then he went back to Minnesota when it actually came time to sign.
Hey, if you think Bill Belichick thinks the right way to do it is to build out a defense via the secondary, do you think Dave Gettleman's doing it right or wrong?
I was going to say DeAndre Baker, the first round pick, had a horrible night. The breach mentioned that huge.
Well, I was about to ask. That was the other thing I was going to ask about, pass interference. Did you think that DeAndre Baker got hosed there, or is it he just?
Yeah, he did. He had a terrible night. He got hosed in the pass interference. Everyone on the planet knows they're not going to overturn it. I joked with you guys on Slack that I don't even know if you guys ever saw The Last Boy Scout, but one of the first scenes in the Bruce Willis Damon Wayans football movie is that one of the players pulls out a gun on the field and shoots the other player. If that happened tonight on the game and someone threw a flag for pass interference or shooting a player, if that's even a penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct, maybe is that what that falls under? There's no way Al Riveron would overturn it. I'm like, nah, it's good.
Just don't. Not enough evidence.
Not enough evidence. Back to sipping the champagne.
I don't know if y'all saw my tweet, but I like the idea that the –
Which one?
It's good.
Brinson, you've had 108,000 of them.
You got dunked on.
Since 3 years ago.
And every time my wife's like, you tweet way too much. I'm like, let me scroll through here. I'm just like, oh, I've tweeted 42 times since.
it's a lot. And I will say this before you tell your story about Twitter that probably no one wants to hear. Brinson was angry on Monday morning because a weatherman in Tampa Bay called him out.
Hold on, we'll get to that in a second. We got Jameis stuff we can talk about after the break. But first I want to point out that I guess this is a question. Okay. If I make a joke on Twitter and then I repurpose it for this podcast without saying that I tweeted it, are you guys, like, I feel like Ryan's gonna be like, oh, you're going to use your Twitter jokes on us?
I don't care.
Again? Okay.
I muted you on Twitter a long time ago, so you can use all the jokes you want.
That's a lie.
He would be so angry.
I don't care. I want these guys to lean into these pass interference, replay, answers. Like, I want Cleet Blakeman coming out and going, upon further review, the ruling on the field of pass interference is still the same. And like, and then you can be like, upon further review, the ruling on the field is over my dead body going to be changed. Just kidding, Mike Tomlin. I gotcha. Or just yell psych into the microphone really loudly.
Or maybe like on Naked Gun, do the Leslie Nielsen umpire dance.
He's like doing the split, like punch in the air. Yeah, sure. Anything.
Pat Shermer's turning his face. His face is turning red. He's so angry.
He looked like Tom Coughlin in a cold weather game. That's how red his face was.
It was, and like, I get it. I mean, like, I've been there in terms of playing Madden and like hit the angry challenge button. Like, you're just like, F it. And you just, like, that's all they're doing. He's just pissed off that things didn't go his way and he's throwing the challenge flag. I can't believe he didn't challenge it a second time.
But it was an emotional challenge, but it was interference. Like, if it is interference, you should win the challenge. And I get that you can't win challenges. But this would be like, if I'm in a school zone,
okay,
that's 35 miles an hour and I'm going 70 and the cop's just like, eh, whatever. But you know, then if I hit a kid, I'm probably going to get the speeding ticket, which
you won't. You won't though. Al Riveron will peel the kid off the pavement, throw him on the sidewalk.
That was one out of 10 on the
end. Yeah, that was I chose Sean's analogy because I thought it was good. But
okay. I was going to float my analogy. I'll try to redeem Breach here, who is normally perfect with these. For me, it's like drunk texting in college freshmen. It's like, it seems like a good idea. You really want to do it. You're getting kind of emotional and you send it and it never works. It's always a bad idea.
challenging it is like sending a drunk text, and the NFL coaches are like college freshmen getting drunk and getting emotional. I think the moral of the story
Sean
is
actually, John, Sean actually tweeted that earlier, just so you know. He
pulled Sean, I think he knows.
If Breach explained it to me, like if Breach did the analogy, I would have liked it.
So basically, I got to start like ghostwriting mine for Breach and then give it to him.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that we were in Fort Lauderdale in August. Sean was actually drunk tweeting from the bar at his lady friend in San Francisco, setting up a date.
I think he was emotional. He was like Tindering.
So Sean is the Al Riveron. Let's move on. Sean is the Al Riveron of this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, now he wants to move on. Weird.
Yeah. No, but I agree with you. It's like, you're like, you know what? I am going to slide up in some DMs. And then it's like, you know what? That was a bad idea. I regret. I mean, not that I do that.
There's just like no, it's like you have a 5% chance of succeeding, but in the moment you think like, oh, this actually might work this time.
Right. It doesn't. You're going to humiliate yourself in front of somebody, whether it's a national television audience or a girl who, who clearly wants nothing to do with you. Somebody
Brenton, write this down. Next offseason, we need to do a podcast that is strictly about drunk texts that we sent while we were in college.
We didn't have texts when I was in college.
Oh, you guys are that old. Yeah, wow. Texting. I had texting.
No, no way. I didn't have texting. I'd go.
Did you go to an Amish school? You didn't have texting.
You're the same age, Breach. You didn't have a phone in college.
I had texting.
I didn't have a phone
in
college.
What year were you guys in college?
I started in 99.
91 to 95. I guarantee you I have plenty
Sean,
of.
Ryan did not have a phone.
No.
I graduated in 2005. And you had a phone. Going to college without internet, man.
You did not have a phone as a freshman, Breach.
I didn't say I had one as a freshman. I said I had one in college.
Breach definitely went to college.
It took Breach 8 years, yeah.
I'm not going to make fun of him for anybody.
Everyone goes to school for 8 years. Hey, yeah, it's called medical school.
We had, like, you would have four dudes living in a house and you would share a landline. Yeah. you'd be like, you get home from the bar at like 1 a.m. and get up on the landline. You'd be like, I've made a mistake.
I left plenty of inebriated voicemails. I can guarantee you that.
If anyone is listening here that has them.
You guys hear a good story?
And you couldn't even send drunk Twitter DMs or Facebook messages because Facebook Messenger didn't exist, even though Facebook did.
There's no way to – yeah, you what? Just – yeah. So, I'll tell the story later. I won't tell it now. Do I hear it? Do I hear it or not?
Do it.
Okay. So, I dated my wife in college. We broke up for just like 6 years in between, but we dated in college. And AK is from Winston-Salem. I'm from High Point. Same area code. 336. So one night I had been out to the bar on like a Friday and I was supposed to go back to her house afterwards, but I was going to call first before I came back. So I didn't have a cell phone, but I borrowed somebody's phone.
Was it Breach's? He had a phone in 1984.
Yeah, it was Breach's 1985.
Zach Morris phone?
I borrowed somebody's phone. Like I call and I'm out in the parking lot of this bar at Crowley's and I'm like 336-882-8734. It's like ring, 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 ring. And this dude picks up. And I was like, who the F is? I was like, who is this? He goes, this is Bob. Who is this? I was like, who the F is Bob? And then all of a sudden I go, crap, that's my dad. And I call my dad at like 1:30 in the morning and like custom.
You drunk called your dad.
my girlfriend's house and just hung up on him. And
you drunk dialed your dad. That is hilarious.
I love Brenton beer muscles, by the way.
By the way, I can say that number on the podcast because that house number, that's my old parents' old house number. It's no longer in usage. And so, 336-882-8734. Like, if you're our age, Ryan, like, I bet you remember your folks' number, right?
I remember my phone number from.
I do too.
Well, yeah, I'm older than you, Sean. I remember my phone number from first grade, 346-8526. 919 area code back in the day.
I hope no one has that.
I'm 919. Yeah, and so AK's cell phone still is a 336 number, but I called my dad at 1:30 in the morning and cussed him out, and then the next
day. Did you ever tell him that was you?
He called the house for the next day and goes, hey, buddy, how you doing? Hey, Dad. He goes,
not great, Bob.
And I was like, yeah, not great, Bob. All right, so that's my drunken Brenton college story.
Pretty good.
Up next for the Cowboys, Vikings at home, Sunday Night Football. What do you think about that? Kirby Cousins is going to show up in a big way?
Do the Vikings do the Cowboys have a winning record?
They do. By the way,
no, you will not.
I hope you like watching the Dallas Cowboys play football, because you're going to see a lot of them. They had tonight, Monday night football, last night, Monday night football. Next week, Sunday night against the Vikings. The week after that, they're at New England on Fox at 4:25. That's guaranteed to be the Buck Aikman game. The week after that, they're on CBS against Buffalo for Thanksgiving. The week after that, they're on Thursday night football against in Chicago against the Bears. Please, in that. The week after that, they're against the Rams at 4:25 on Fox. That's the Buck Aikman game. And the week after that, in week 16, they're at Philly at 4:25. That's also the Fox late game, but could be flexed in the Sunday night spot. So in between there, the week 11 is Detroit, which will probably not be prime time. But we are staring down seven out of 8 weeks where we will have Cowboys primetime games. So soak it in.
That sounds like fun. You know, a Cowboys player, you guys talked about Leonard Williams real quick. I just want to mention Michael Bennett real quick because this was his debut game with the Cowboys. And a little fun fact for you, he played two straight games against the Giants. His last game with the Patriots was against the Giants. His first game against with the Cowboys was against the Giants. And he actually looked good out there. I think we talked about during the trade that Chris Richard, the Cowboys passing game coordinator, co-defense coordinator, knew how to use him. And he got a sack.
Three
against
hits.
The Giants. He got three hits. He was all over the place. And for a guy making – he did more tonight with the Cowboys on Monday night than he did during his entire stint with the Patriots. So if you're the Cowboys, you have to be encouraged that he had a productive night.
The Giants next play the Jets and then have their bye, which is basically the same thing as playing the Jets. No one cares. They also play the Bears. That'll be the sad sack NFC game.
Hey, they beat the Bears last year.
Maybe they'll beat the Bears this year. Danny Dimes lighting them up. All right, we got to get to break. And then after that, we will tell you about what this NFL team might move to London coming up after the break.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping in Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I actually like the idea of a John Breach teaser. Like, we should do a John Breach teaser of the week where Breach takes a piece of news and writes a teaser. Like a.
You'll never believe.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like something you'd hear on like the radio, like a radio tease, like, coming up after the break, you won't believe what NFL team could move to Los Angeles.
Like a Dateline teaser.
Give us a good one for this team, Breach. What would you do for this one?
You won't believe which NFL team might be moving to an international city that doesn't have a team right now. And it's a country that you've probably heard of.
Too long.
How many international cities have football teams?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
The last two things are like totally vague. And it's a country you've heard of.
See, I thought, I thought he was going to go with like Los Angeles football team. So then people don't know if it's the Rams.
You have to mention
or the
things like headless bodies found or, you know, missing.
More broad. California. What California football team?
So, we're ripping through some news. We'll get some five star reviews. But Vincent Bonsignore, did I pronounce that correctly? of the Athletic reported on Monday evening that, and here I'm just going to read from the block quote. The Athletic has learned through NFL sources that the possibility of the Chargers moving to London has been broached among league personnel. The Athletic has also learned that, I mean, we get it. You're the Athletic. We're reading the Athletic. While the team is fully committed to Los Angeles, where it will move into the new $4.5 billion stadium with the Rams next year, the Chargers would at least listen if the NFL approached them about London as a possible option. Finally, the Athletic has learned that the NFL owners are concerned enough about the Chargers situation in LA, where a crowded sports market and the presence of the more established Rams has resulted in a tepid embracement of the Chargers, that they would provide the necessary support for a relocation to London if the Chargers pursue it. In other words, the Athletic continues, London offers the Chargers and the NFL an immediate and rare opportunity to fix a glaring problem in a way that checks off multiple boxes, both for the franchise and the league. Breach.
First question. Who wrote this? Who broke this story?
Vincent Bonsignore.
Second question. Can the Athletic sue you for reading behind their paywall? Because it sounds like you just read the entire article. The entire article is like 7,000 words, so he didn't even read 5% of it.
And actually he had an interesting quote. It was an interesting quote. It was like surprising because of how far it was buried. But Chris Halpin, the NFL's chief strategy and growth officer, said it's definitely within the realm of possibility. Like, why isn't that at the top? Why are you like sources are telling me? Be like, this dude says this might happen and he's in charge of it.
All right. Sorry, Breach. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Brinson was asking me a question. I thought I didn't.
This feels like your wheelhouse. LA team. Moving to London, like you're definitely
San Diego team when he was in San Diego.
Exactly. Breach has chased off multiple NFL teams. He has chased off the Chargers, the Raiders, probably the Titans are probably leaving sometime soon. You're probably moving to London to chase the Chargers to Japan. I mean,
I'm 2 for 2. The last two cities I lived in were Oakland and San Diego. And here's the thing. I think a lot of people in San Diego probably were hoping that if the Chargers did move, it would be back to San Diego, but they're just never going to get a stadium deal done. And here's the other thing, and the reason why this is so believable, is that the whole Chargers trying to sell tickets at this new Rams stadium is a total disaster. Because remember, Stan Kroenke is building the stadium with his own money, renting it to the Chargers, and he cannot be happy with the fact that the Chargers can't sell tickets because they have to pay him rent using the money from selling tickets. And so because they couldn't sell tickets, they cut the price practically in half. So now let's say you're a resident of LA and your choices are to buy Ram season tickets for $10,000 or Charger season tickets for $4,000. You're a casual football fan. You're going to do the Chargers. So now not only are you not selling tickets, but you're undercutting Kroenke and the Rams, who are footing the bill for your stadium. And so, you know, I've read a few things over the past few months that Kroenke is just not happy with the whole entire situation. The Rams, the Chargers are a bad tenant, a bad roommate, if you will.
They're drunk texting everybody in sight, inviting people over, like to having parties in the living room. Like, get out of here, man.
Yeah, this is you get home. Everyone's passed out on the ground, beer bottles on their face and tequila shots poured on their, I was going to say,
oh,
nipples.
Lord.
We have the same nipples.
Whoa.
Well, hey, did.
So, did you ever pass out in college and pour tequila shots in your nipples before you passed out? That's a weird thing.
No.
You're like, oh, good night, sweet world. And like dump a tequila shot in your nipples.
Who didn't? You guys didn't?
Right.
What the weird thing is you leave your office door open and your wife is walking around downstairs in like the kitchen getting an ice water. And all she can hear is me she can hear me screaming about like, you didn't dump tequila on your nipples? Like,
I mean, she's married to Breach. She's heard far weirder
things. I'm talking
about
my wife. But yes.
Oh, your wife. Oh, that
she's married to Breach too. We didn't want to tell you in the podcast, but bad news. So, look, here's some other sort of ancillary things that came out of this that was buried in the 7,000 word article someone tweeted about. So, the Chargers, if they move, they would no longer be in the AFC West. There's a possibility that they swap with the Texans. The Texans would move to the West, and then the Chargers would move to the South. So that sucks for those.
I missed that part. God, this is insane.
That would suck for those teams in the South who now have to travel over to London once a year when otherwise they wouldn't have to do that if the Texans had remained in the South. There's also another situation where
the playoffs?
The Dolphins moved to the AFC South. The Texans moved to the AFC West, and then the Chargers also moved to
The Chargers move to the AFC East, and imagine who Bill Belichick would murder if that happened, because the Patriots have to fly to London every year to play a game. He would veto that. I mean, alone would shoot that down.
And he would go from having to play the Dolphins twice a year to having to play the Chargers twice a year. Although we should also point out that I think it's interesting that Phillip Rivers is no longer doesn't have a contract signed. Phillip Rivers is not moving to London. We can all agree with that, right?
No, he has 27 kids. There's no way he's moving. He moved 80 miles north, and I think that's a burden on him because he takes the Transformer automobile where he watches television in the back.
Yeah.
You can't take a Transformer automobile to London? There's ferries. Drive from California to the East Coast, get on the ferry.
That's 27 passports you have to get.
But there are some really interesting angles too, like from a gambling perspective, for instance. So the team in London would have to do, this is according from the article, would have to do multiple game swings in America to address the travel issue. So if you play in London, you're going to get a 3 to 4 game swing where you have to basically travel around the country playing
like a circus,
sort of, and playing various teams either from your division. So the Chargers would fly into, let's say they move to the AFC East, and this is insane.
They should assign Phillip Rivers to be their quarterback only in away games in the U.S.
Well, let me throw one more thing. You guys talk about all the division shifting and everything. Brinson, you mentioned the quote from Chris Halpin, the NFL's chief strategy and growth officer. He was asked if the Chargers or another franchise could potentially move. It wasn't specifically the Chargers, so that changes the context of his answer a little bit. And the reason I'm saying that is because Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, also wrote a story about this report. And he said he kind of wasn't buying it because his understanding is that Shad Khan, the Jaguars owner, has the right of first refusal to move to London. Remember, Shad Khan almost bought Wembley Stadium a year and a half ago. So
Andy owns the football club in London.
And he got voted down. The Wembley board of directors voted it down. So he's not going to be happy that he has been playing in London every year for the past 8 years, kind of gunning towards this, because he's made it pretty clear he doesn't think he can make the revenue to succeed in Jacksonville. So you have to think he would not be happy. But the flip side of that is that they just opened this new stadium, the Tottenham Stadium, and so maybe they're going to put two teams in London, because I don't think there's any way the Jags would let another team move to London because they just make too much money.
Because two teams in Los Angeles has worked out so well so far. Well,
and look, Florio likes to stir ye old pot, and that's fine. But I like Mike, and I think he does a pretty good job, even though he ticks a bunch of people off. And he writes, and I do also like that he writes like a fifth grader sometimes. He's like, so this is Florio's quote. He's like, so maybe someone is trying to force Khan's hand, nudging him to poo or get off the loo regarding a move to England by throwing the Chargers into the mix. Or maybe somebody connected to the Rams is trying to bring to a head whatever issues may be percolating behind the scenes regarding the actual perceived inability of the Chargers to pull their financial weight in the stadium the Rams and Chargers will share. So in other words, this leak, while it's like, ooh, maybe the Chargers are trying to make the move, the Chargers are like, whoa, like what?
I mean, I don't
do that, but
I don't know if you guys already mentioned this. Would they be playing in Tottenham Stadium? Is that where they'd be?
Yes, conceivably, that's where they would play.
Honestly,
for NFL,
the Chargers would be the perfect fit to share a stadium with Tottenham.
Don't want to hear the
two teams. Two teams that don't win anything ever that should win a lot.
But here's the thing: is that let's say Jacksonville says, "Oh, we don't want the Chargers there. We are going to move there." Now the Chargers look even stupider because it's like, oh, we couldn't make it work in L.A. We tried to move to London, but then that blew up in our face. And then they're back at square one because they keep falling on their face because their ownership group has no idea what they're doing or how to run a football team.
The natural progression is that they go from San Diego to Los Angeles to London, and eventually they're going to end up on the moon. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
why would the moon want them, Ryan? Why would the moon want them?
They don't, but they don't know that until they get there and build a stadium.
If you're going to do this, it actually wouldn't be that crazy to put two teams in there, because then if you send a team over, they would play a two-game swing against those teams. So
it's an idiotic idea, not your idea, but the idea of, first of all, the taxes. How are you going to handle the taxes? The travel, just sort of getting your body used to being 5 hours away if you're on the East Coast.
What about all the Ambien?
Ryan,
Ryan,
are you saying two teams or just any teams, period?
I think any teams is a huge logistical headache. JLC wrote about it last year or the year before, about all the logistical hurdles you have to get through before you even get a team over there. And then, as you pointed out, John, imagine Bill Belichick having to go over there once a year outside of going over there every 4 years or whatever. That ain't going to fly.
And, well, here's another thing is that JLC, actually, I think the most recently thing, because we haven't talked about this in a while because there hasn't been any London, a team might move there, is that the biggest hurdle is playoffs because you have to flip and play the next week. A lot of teams have their bye after playing in London, like we're seeing with the Texans and Jags this week. But obviously, if you're in the playoffs, let's say you play in London and then the next week you have to play in Seattle. You're almost traveling for 2 days. You're losing all this time.
Like, which way do you go when you leave London? You go right and left.
Exactly. But one thing about moving a team there, the last time Goodell was asked about it was October 2018. And he said, I feel this market without question could have an NFL team. There's no question a team could be successful here. And he kind of hinted that it's eventually going to happen, but didn't really put a timeline on it.
I also think one thing that Florio didn't mention in here, but that that Bonsignori didn't mention or Florio didn't mention, that I think is at least interesting, that could potentially be sort of an agenda-driven thing here. If you put a team in London, the easiest way to take some of the burden off of that team, teams having to go over there and that team having to come over and all that, go to 17 or 18 games and add a second bye weekend. And so if you do add that team, all of a sudden the NFL can be like, hey, we really need to go to 17 or 18 games and add that bye weekend on this next CBA. And so you just grind your way through 2020 and then in 2021 work out the new CBA and get those extra games in there.
But if you're the players, now you're adding extra game and now they have to fly to London too, every single one of them. I mean, like, I don't know why they would agree to that.
Well, I mean, I don't know why they would agree to a lot of the stuff they agree to, but because their union sucks. I mean, they would get more cash. Ryan,
yeah, we joke
don't Ryan about all the business that you have to deal with. Like, it's actually like a big deal. Like, you would, like, would you be a United States citizen? How would it work if you went and played if you played two games a year in London?
Well, yeah, you'd be a citizen, but I mean, for tax purposes, you'd be paying taxes all over the world.
You'd be taxed in pounds. Nobody wants to be taxed in pounds.
Yeah, like, it'd be a huge pain in the butt.
And then the Rams Stadium is built for two teams. So the flip side of that is that now you can once again use Los Angeles as holding your own city hostage. Like, the Bengals lease runs the Bills. You have teams that leases that run out in the next 5 or 6 years. All of a sudden, it's like, build us a new stadium or we're going to go move in with the Rams in L.A.
You know what it reminds me of?
No.
Have you ever seen Basketball?
Not in a long time. Bob Costas was in it.
He was in it. Let's see.
Much like the hired guns of the Old West.
And after playing for New England, San Diego, Houston, St. Louis, a year for the Toronto Argonauts, plus one season as a greeter at the Desert Inn, I'm happy to finally play here in the fine city of Miami.
Minnesota.
Whatever.
Soon it was commonplace for entire teams to change cities in search of greater profits. The Minneapolis Lakers moved to Los Angeles, where there are no lakes. The Oilers moved to Tennessee, where there is no oil. The Jazz moved to Salt Lake City, where they don't allow music. The Oakland Raiders.
I love that so much. The Jazz. All right, let's get to the rest of the news. Anything else to add from that?
No, I mean, if the Chargers can't fill a soccer stadium, why are they going to go 8,000 miles away to not fill a stadium in London?
Well, I think the whole thing is that the London fans show up no matter what. They don't care who's
for how
playing.
Long, though?
No, I think there's like a legitimate interest from London folks in terms of supporting a football team. And like, if you drop a football team there, they're just going to back that football team. It's like when they drop the Panthers.
But for how long, though?
That's
like,
right.
I'm kind of with Ryan. I feel like they come because it happens a few times a year and it's this cool thing.
Like English.
What happens when they get 8 games there?
You're only adding 4. They've been doing 4 games, so you're only adding 4 more.
But that's a novelty, John. English soccer fans are loyal to the teams because they grew up with those teams. And when they get promoted or relegated, they follow those teams. If you bring a charter team over in 2021 or whatever, and they go 4-12 every year.
So what?
And you're paying $200 a ticket.
Sean, you rooted for Arsenal as like a 5-year-old, I guess.
That's what I'm not English, so.
Right, but you still root for them. You can find a team. You can find a new team.
I think Ryan's point is that, like, obviously an NFL team that goes there will never be able to surpass I'm saying they would never be able to surpass the way the fans feel about their local soccer team.
Kidding. Nobody. That's not the goal.
They're not going to go. They're not going to go to see a team that's terrible year in and year out. Yes.
Well, here's the thing: there's a lot of soccer is also played on Sundays and Saturdays too. So, like, if there's a conflict, no one's going to pick the NFL game
an
away Tottenham game.
Would you suggest that this is a serious case of snotty soccer agenda from the two soccer dorks on the
podcast?
I didn't even bring it up. I was going to let it slide. I got to support Ryan.
Perfect blend with Tottenham, two losers of the relegation on their mind.
I'll give you 400 pounds if you can name two people on Tottenham, right?
Hotspur and Tot.
Exactly.
I'm impressed that he knew the name, so I'll give him credit.
No one's. I don't care who you are. Yeah, you're not going
to
pay.
These soccer players change teams left and right. Get out of here. They would support if you said the Chargers, the Jaguars over there, and there would be enough fans who would wholly support a
for
team.
How long though?
Yeah, maybe for the
maybe
first
longer than
years.
The Chargers are supported here.
That's a lot of hoops to jump through on a hope and a prayer.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying the NFL wants that cash.
One of the ideas that was thrown out when Jacksonville was talking about that whole the idea of them moving to London was floated was play four games in Jacksonville, four games in London, and those are your home games so that you have like an American base where you're practicing and then, you know, your London place.
Worse.
That's like the Rays the like plan that was like half the year in Montreal, half the year in. But that would solve like your playoff traveling problem because then you would play your postseason games in America. And
unless you're a London season ticket holder,
they don't care. You just tell them the eighth regular season game's a playoff game. They'll believe. So they don't care. So you agree that they don't care.
By the way, I love this like line. Like you can tell Bonsignore is like. Like I'm not trying to call the guy out, but it's like you can tell who's buttering his bread on this from the source perspective. He's like, due to time zone challenges, Sunday games in London would have to start at 6 p.m. or 9 p.m. locally to fit in the American television windows. Monday night or Sunday night games would not be possible in London. Also, the quick turnaround nature of the playoffs could cause some scheduling gymnastics when it came to trying to get a U.S.-based team to London on short notice. All those issues seem like more like manageable dynamics than deal-breaking hindrances. It's like, no, if Bill Belichick has to fly a week, like immediate, like the Belichick example is great because he's like, I'm not doing that. I'm not flying to London and playing a game. Like, if you had to go play an away playoff game in London for the wild card weekend, that would be an enormous disadvantage.
You know who you put in charge of that, though, to answer those questions, to answer the phone there?
Al Riveron, baby.
All right, let's keep going. We got to finish up before that kills me. Speaking of guys who are under fire in the media, Adam Gase and Ron Rivera. Ryan, you mentioned that quote that Adam Gase had.
Mm-hmm.
On yesterday's podcast. What you didn't mention is the follow-up question from the New York Daily News. Did you hear the follow-up question?
Yes, because I mentioned it on the podcast.
I mean, it's the NFL, man. It's the NFL. You can't be embarrassed by this.
What is not this one validates your decision
to fire you? I'm not going to answer that. It's ridiculous.
Okay, if you couldn't hear that. Oh, did you actually mention
that? Didn't hear it. Listen to yesterday's podcast when I talked about it and then Breach followed up, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, the guy, look, all I want to do is try and play the sound. Okay. We're trying to incorporate more sound on the podcast.
Okay.
You know what? Don't be embarrassed by this bleep. Adam Gase was asked by the New York Daily News. He's like, do you think this loss justifies Stephen Ross?
Fair question, by the way.
No, you can't ask somebody that to their face.
No way. That's completely fair.
I disagree. I think it's sort of, I thought it was sort of inappropriate.
This is where you draw the moral line, Brenton.
I just don't think you go to like the press conference. You're like, do you think this justifies you getting fired last, like 3 months ago?
The answer is
yes. What else do you write about if you're a reporter writing about the Jets? That's the question everyone wants to know. Is Adam Gase going to be fired or should he be fired? Of course, you have to get his perspective on it.
No. He didn't ask, do you think this game justifies the Jets firing you? He said, do you think this game
last year for being a terrible coach?
He said, do you think that this game justifies you getting fired last year?
That's still hilariously funny and valid. You lose to a winless team. Any question's valid.
Yeah.
That's kind of the rule of journalism.
You ask that in like a scrum of reporters and like a close, like you might get punched.
Who's Adam Gase punching? The taco man?
Anish Mehta? I don't know.
Like you just said he couldn't win a fight with Pat Shurmur. Why is he punching anyone?
Shurmur's tall and ripped. Are you nuts? Shurmur's stacked, bro.
Shurmur fanboy here.
Shurmur is
you've been lifting weights with Shurmur?
I'm hitting if we ever get a steel cage death match odds on coaches, I'm hitting Shurmur at like as a sleeper at 45-1.
I think you were looking at someone else because I've stood next to Shurmur before. He might be 5'11".
I don't know. This podcast, you might have killed his odds like Trubisky's. He's going to be up to 10-1 now that you've been McDermott overselling him here.
Good. Yeah, McDermott's a sleeper. Belichick's the ultimate sleeper.
No. You see, all I picture is him laying on that the little floating island thing on his vacation with swimming trunks on.
Yeah, exactly. But all of a sudden, he's got like 15 ninja stars.
He would cheat. He'd find some way to like screw.
I'm definitely packing heat in that little.
He'd be like Prisco. He'd just snap a bottle off, and you'd be dead before you knew it. Like sitting in a bag or something.
No, it's like at the beginning of The Dark Knight, where the Joker is like told everyone to kill everyone, and the last person doesn't realize that he was also told to be killed. He had like made all these deals with every coach to kill off everyone else until there's just one left, and then he kills them.
That's a very on-brand analogy, Sean. Ron Rivera was asked about Cam Newton. I never show about that. Ron Rivera was asked about Cam Newton, and Ron Rivera got a little snippy with the media.
You mean go ahead and get the proverbial Cam question out of the way if you guys decide if you know.
Without a doubt. What we're going to do is Allen will start this week. Cam will continue his rehab program. I've got nothing further to add, guys. I can't tell you anything other than what I've already told you.
Ron, is he discussing his options? I mean, we've kind of heard a lot of talk about.
Yeah, I don't know who's talking, but we're not talking. I know that much. So, I can't answer anything other than add anything else to anything.
Did you have a chance to meet with him this morning or speak with him?
Okay. I don't have anything else to add on that.
I don't know what is going on with Ron Rivera in these comments. Like,
by the way, first question from our buddy Joe Person, William Mary grad, now at The Athletic.
Friend of the program. He's been on the podcast multiple times, I believe. Probably loves having to come on this podcast. Ron Rivera was also asked about Cam being a distraction.
I mean, the truth of the matter is if you didn't ask, it wouldn't be a bother. And I mean that. I mean, I give you an answer and tell you what it is, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not sure why it's continued being brought up. You know, every Monday I'd be happy to answer the opening question, answer the elephant in the room, and then move on. And I think, you know, for him, you know, he goes about it because it's asked. And that's the truth. I mean, it really is. I mean, you know, I know you guys have to do a job and try to get information, but I'm going to tell you, I'm telling you the truth. Okay. I'm telling you what I know. I'm not going to get up here and make a story. If I'm going to tell you exactly what I know. Okay. And what these guys know is what I tell them. And to me, it's the truth.
Has it become a distraction?
Again, when the question is asked, it becomes a distraction, in my opinion. No, the guys understand that they're going to play with who's here who's on the field. And it doesn't matter who's on the field. As long as that guy can help them win, they're going to do everything they can to help. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of playing the game, playing.
So that was Joe Person asking, has Cam become a distraction? And Ron Rivera's like, no, it hadn't become a distraction. Is
it? You know what? And I always come back to this. You should think to yourself, and I appreciate Ron Rivera trying to be honest, and that's admirable and all that.
He also said like 3 or 4 weeks ago, or at the beginning of the season, he said, it's not his foot, guys. Why don't you get off my back? It's not his foot.
And people are, if you say, is Cam Newton a distraction? No. That's it. Just what would Bill Belichick do? No, he's not. Yeah. Ask again. No. No, he's not. Done. No one's writing about it because all they have is like 2 words to write down. No, period. No, period. And then you move on. But he gives these 200-word answers, and we have to talk about it.
Well, it's very bizarre, though. It's like, why are you treating this on a week-to-week basis as if Cam might just magically come back? Yeah. Why don't you just say, here's the deal, guys. Cam's rehabbing. Kyle Allen is our starter until further notice. I think what is happening is Cam does not want to have surgery because he knows it will effectively end his Panthers career. Will certainly end his season. And that the Panthers are trying to tiptoe around how they want to deal with this. They want to make it like, you know, Cam, you're welcome back when you're healthy. You know, you're welcome back when you're healthy. But like, and
what
I
does
get
that have
it
to do with the media.
Well, I just think this. I think that this is. I don't think it would go this way in New York. Like he's not blasting the New York. Like it's just different in Charlotte or Nashville or wherever else. Like if this was happening in New York. He'd have to, he's not going to give, like, you know what? I'm done talking about this, guys. And leaving. It's like, no, you're getting blitzkrieged for the next 15 minutes by these questions until you finally lose it and go full Rex Ryan. I mean,
that would be a Rex Ryan situation.
Yeah.
You're saying because it's a smaller market, there's not as much media, so he's not – he's kind of power playing and saying, like, it's my way and get away.
Yeah, I've been in that room a bunch, in that interview room down there in Charlotte, and it's like it's the same six people. I mean, it's, you know, Joe Person, Jordan Rodrigue, David Newton, Bill Voth is there from the Panthers. I mean, they, you know, it's not – it's never been – you know, the local – what's that?
It's only four names. I want two more.
Elena Getzenberg.
I don't know the names of the local Charlotte media, although
Jonathan,
but like,
Jones would have been an easy.
I just named one.
Jonathan Jones was probably there. Mike Solarte. I mean, it's the same guys. Like, but like Ron Rivera. You guys know what I'm talking about. Like, it's just different in the smaller markets. These guys.
But he's not helping himself by, as Breach points out, power playing. Just say no.
Yeah.
Or take a lesson from the political PR handbook and say, I don't comment on ongoing investigations. I don't comment on ongoing players who aren't on the field.
Also, like, you could just be honest. You could say, hey, look, Cam's not ready this week. We're going with Kyle. I don't know
he
when Cam's
said
ready.
That, didn't he?
I mean, I guess, but he's like being a D about it.
A diva?
A diva, yes. And I don't know. It just feels like you can snuff it. Also, what are the Panthers doing? Speaking of, like, we talk about Belichick, the Panthers had an open IR spot or an open roster spot for this last game against the Titans. They just did. They filled it with Dante Moncrief on Monday. Like, what are you going into a game with an open roster spot for? What is that about? What if you need that guy?
They didn't. Who they beat the crap out of yesterday on Sunday?
Tennessee Nashville Titans.
Right. They were fine. They were holding that roster spot for Marcus Mariota.
Okay. The Falcons moved a bunch of coaches, or if you prefer, deck chairs around on the Titanic. Does it matter? Raheem Morris, wide receiver coach, moves to the secondary coach. Dave Brock, running back coach, to the wide receiver coach. Bernie Parmalee assumes the running back coach duties. Ryan, as you scroll over those names on a scale of 1 to 10, how interested are you?
How what?
How interested are you in these changes?
Not at all. It doesn't matter. As you pointed, a rearrangement of the deck chairs in the Titanic. Not only are they headed for the iceberg, they've already hit three of them over the course of the last 8 weeks. They are done. We talked about it all the time in the offseason, how Dan Quinn fired everyone, and now it's his team. And now suddenly he's like, well, we got to fix these things with the coaching staff, and this is an attempt to do that. I don't know. What are you doing? They're 1-7. We don't know if Matt Ryan's going to play. He didn't practice on Monday, I believe. They're going to get blown out. I don't remember who they're playing, but it's going to be a blowout.
The Saints.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's like 12.5 points.
Yeah. Spread. Forget it. It's a wrap.
All right. Moving along. Jacoby Brissett sprained MCL. Sean, should the Colts play him this week, or should they sit him out? They are against the Dolphins.
No, don't play him. You don't need to play him.
Three straight division games after they play the Dolphins.
No, you do not need to play him. We talked about on yesterday's podcast that Frank Reich, I think, deserves most of the credit for the way Jacoby Brissett has played, especially if you look at, like, Brissett's, for example, yards per attempt. Like, Brissett's playing really well, but he's only averaging, like, something like 6.7 yards per attempt. It's a really short passing game. Brian Hoyer is more than good enough to execute that offense to beat the Dolphins. So I would not risk it. Save him for the stretch run, because that's what the season's going to come down to.
Cool. The Vikings are uncertain about Adam Thielen's return. Breach, he only played 7 snaps on Sunday before exiting with a hamstring injury. Are you starting Adam Thielen, and should the Vikings play Adam Thielen?
I started Adam Thielen on Sunday against the Chiefs and got a big fat 0. But thank God I was playing the last place team in our league who didn't have a defense, a kicker, or a tight end going. So he'd already given up, so I did win. But that being said,
hashtag, you hate to see it.
You do hate to see it. Look, you try to put, you can't rush people back from a hamstring injury. I'm not the doctor of this podcast. Brenton is, but if there is one injury I do know about, it is hamstrings, and they're sensitive, and you have to let them heal all the way. And if I'm the Vikings, they play the Cowboys in week 10, they play the Broncos in week 11, then they have a bye. I let him sit out till the bye, and then I talk to him on November 25th, the day after the bye, and I say, hey, man, how's your hamstring feel? And if he says it feels good, then he plays, and if he doesn't, then he sits out another week. So I think that you absolutely say you shove him for 3 weeks for these two games of the bye.
Agreed. Preston Williams suffered a season-ending ACL injury. He was having a really good year. Deshaun Jackson is likely to miss the rest of the season.
Wait a second. You can't just gloss over this. This is terrible news for Preston Williams. Great news for you and Devontae Parker.
Oh, goodness.
I would never root on another man's injury.
No, I know you wouldn't, but the reality is that this could give you a chance to make up a little ground.
In the
Have we checked?
You think if Preston Williams tears his ACL and you think I'm Googling Devontae Parker passing or receiving yards?
That sounds like something you would do.
Yeah, 100%. Or a doctor, after all.
Have we checked? Was the competition yards? Was that the metric we're using?
Yes.
So Sammy's Devontae Parker's at 400.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy had an okay game.
So yeah, he had a better
473.
Game.
473. We're up 73 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm winning this thing.
But yeah, Mahomes coming back. He's going off on one game. He's going to have like another 180-yard game, and that's
a wrap.
Parker's going to have a big boy coming up soon. I'm going to win this thing. I'm going to tell you, this is a stroll in the park for your boy. He's got Indy, Cleveland left on the schedule. Oh, yeah. And they're going to be throwing the whole time because you'll be losing. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Have you seen what the Dolphins have down the stretch?
Yes, we've talked about this, about how Devontae Parker's a good waiver wire ad for the playoffs.
Giants, Bengals in the way of the fantasy playoffs, and the New England Patriots, the best defense in the world, but they're going to sit everybody.
Let me ask you this. Would you rather have Devontae Parker? Because I'm thinking about picking him up in my league, and I've already clinched a playoff spot. Would you rather have him or Golden Tate?
Devontae Parker.
I don't know. Okay. It's close.
Okay. I was just wondering because I was thinking about doing it this week.
There's Mark Walton, by the way, suspended four games. So now it's the Kalen Ballage show in Miami in terms of running back. Like, the Giants are going to try and force feed Saquon Barkley every chance they get. And there's a bunch of different weapons. Sterling Shepard will be back sooner rather than later.
They didn't do
that on Monday night.
Devontae Parker is the alpha and the omega of the Dolphins offense. Feed him. all right, we got to get to one five-star review before we get out of here. Nick Geyer, 813, left a review on Apple Podcasts. We will answer this. Is a great question. We will answer your question if you leave it on there. More dunks on each other, the better. Amen, brother. More fun facts, the better. Preach, son. Who is the best chef out of all the super friends? Who has the best taste in food selection? I can tell you unequivocally that Ryan Wilson will say himself.
No.
I was actually going to ask you guys this because I was thinking about this.
Are you going to ask a question?
I want to ask you guys a question because you guys are all married. So I want to know how often you guys cook because you guys have more experience, but I feel like I probably cook more than you guys because I cook almost every single day.
I'm going to guess Brinson probably doesn't cook. He grills out. Breach probably cooks a lot. I don't cook at all, and I hear about it quite a bit. The only thing I can crush in terms of cooking is I do gourmet egg sandwiches, but that's it. I hear quite often.
Yeah, I'm better than Ryan.
Say I make egg sandwiches, gourmet egg sandwiches.
I can crush. Oh,
I want to hear why they're gourmet.
Oh, okay. I have a whole thing.
Okay.
Hear it?
Yeah.
So Hawaiian bun.
Mm.
You butter it. You want to hear it or not?
Sean, have a little respect for the man.
You butter the top side, but you put the mayonnaise on the bottom side. I'm not a mayonnaise guy, but you put
mayonnaise on this?
I like mayonnaise.
You can't use gourmet.
What?
I agree.
Just listen, guys. You can write down your comments, and I'll answer them as you ask them. A little bit of mayonnaise. I don't like a lot of mayonnaise. You don't slather it on. Just a little bit on the bottom side because you bite it. It's a little sweet. It's sort of weird. You wouldn't believe it. You cook the eggs, scrambled eggs, a little – like you have to be comfortable, and I think Brinson is. I think I've talked about this. A little runny in the scrambled eggs because they'll cook themselves once you get them off the pan. You grill some pineapple.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds good. I'm in.
You grill the pineapple. You put it on top. And then – and this could bother you a little bit. You put a little – guacamole on top of the pineapple.
Whoa, we've never talked about it. Have we talked about this?
I'm all in on this, Ryan.
It's amazing. So that's all I do, though.
Is this an old Wilson family recipe?
Nah, I watched a bunch of YouTube videos about 5 years ago and sort of cultivated this little egg sandwich thing.
You watched egg sandwich YouTube videos.
I will say that the consistency in general concerns me a little bit just because it's like, you got mayonnaise and scrambled eggs and you got some guacamole. The pineapple is nice because it breaks it up with the crunch a little bit.
I don't like messy sandwiches, by the way, so I keep it tidy.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it sounds like a messy sandwich.
I don't make it messy. I make it relatively small. You can't have – I hate eating hamburgers where everything falls out, so.
Just as a corollary to this, once a year at our tailgates at State Games, my buddy Travis Edmonds does a very similar item. It's actually shockingly similar. It's he grills like little smaller pork chops. Like he basically slices up pork chops into like smaller cuts of meat. So there's not a full, it's like a half a pork chop. King's Hawaiian rolls.
There you go. Yep.
Pineapple on the grill, some Duke's mayonnaise. And you basically get a Hawaiian sandwich out there on the
just throw some eggs on top of that and then you can have a little breakfast sandwich.
You basically have it. I'm a pretty good cook. I can cook a lot and well if I need to, but I don't really do it. I grill out a lot, I guess.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is about, I feel like before I got married, I cooked all the time because I was cooking for myself, but I don't think my wife trusts my cooking.
Really? So now, I figure you cook like four nights a week now.
Well, I mean, we do cook four nights a week, but she does about 75% of it.
So, Ryan, do you do, like, does your wife make in like, cause see, here's the thing. Once you have, like, once kids are involved, it changes the equation completely. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, let's make something cool. Do you like, let's just get this freaking chicken breast on the plate, shove it down and get out of Dodge.
Yeah. Once a month is probably HelloFresh or whatever, the other Blue Apron or whatever. But she does all that. She makes all the lunches for the kids. Like, I'm a shiftless layabout, to quote Shannon Hamilton. Like, I am not helpful at all in that regard. I clean up the kitchen during the day because I feel terrible if she comes home and there are dishes everywhere. But I don't do any of that stuff. So she does it. It's awesome. And the other thing is, and Brinson, you'll find this out when Robbie gets older, like dinner, like she'll spend 45 minutes, 30 minutes making dinner. Dinner takes literally 7.5 minutes. Like, my 12-year-old sits down and he's done. Yeah. My 8-year-old sits down and he's done and they're up and gone like before she can even sit down.
Oh, I remember being a kid and it's like your mom, you think mom's just like, the guy just spent like 2.5 hours making that food. You're like, thanks mom, going to watch TV. See you later.
It infuriates her knowing.
What is, all right, Sean, if you had a, go-to meal.
I'll just tell you what I made tonight.
No, I don't want to hear what you made tonight. I want to hear what you would bring first date. First date, ooh. You're cooking for her. What are you making?
Oh, the last time I cooked for a girl on a date situation, so I did a salad that was – you know who would like this is Prisco because I see him go to a steakhouse and order this instead of a steak. Just tomato, mozzarella, balsamic, and olive oil and garlic as a salad. Then I cut up some tomatoes and some cheese, and that was it. I did a spaghetti type of thing.
Spaghetti is my favorite
with food ever. Like mushrooms, squash, onions, goat cheese.
Oh, what are you doing? Keep it simple.
But if you want to be fancy, but without spending a lot of money on a date, you'd go seafood, get like lobster or scallops. Because everyone likes lobster and scallops, but it's also not like a cheap food. Easy way to impress. I can't believe I just gave that secret out.
Also, scallops sends a message on a date.
Scallops does send a message.
You know what I like to do?
Make scallops for your wife, Ryan, and you'll know what the message is.
Ooh, sort of my cat might go to. I like to take. This is my own personal, like, go-to lunch because my wife hates fish, but, I like to get, tuna steaks.
Yep.
Grill them. I like to do some ginger, white wine, soy sauce, sesame seeds, grill them in a pan. And then I like to put them with some couscous.
Ooh.
And feta cheese, tomatoes, avocados, and maybe a little black olives. Make it for supper. And then have the next day for lunch.
This is pretty amazing because every time we get together, all we eat are hamburgers.
I would eat sushi for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I know. When we were in Florida, he was just trying to get sushi all the time until he realized he had to front our order and he refused to do it.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
It was just a pain in the ass. It was like, okay. Hey, Breach, we didn't get your go-to meal.
My go-to meal that I make for myself is French toast.
Oh, nice.
Wait, but that wasn't my go-to meal. You just asked me what was the last thing I made. What I made tonight.
What did I ask him? I asked him what your go-to meal would be for a date. And you said spaghetti with feta cheese.
Yeah, Sean, that is what you said.
Goat. It was goat.
Cheese. Goat cheese. Okay, so
move on.
Now, what's your go-to meal? Good.
Well, I rotate. I mean, like, lately I've been into this Mediterranean type of chicken, so I'll, like, cook up some chicken, chicken breasts with mushrooms and onions, not kebab style, but, like, kind of like I'm trying to mimic that if you were to go to a Mediterranean place, with some hummus on the side and some harissa sauce that you mix in. It's an Ethiopian pepper sauce. And then I'll do a side salad with lettuce, tomato, cucumber, walnuts, and a little bit of feta cheese, and a little bit of a Greek dressing.
This dude is big on salads.
That's what I had tonight. Yeah, I always eat a salad. Like,
I was a salad. It has lettuce.
Well, I do spinach a lot too.
That's the only thing I use for salads is spinach. I don't really do romaine.
Spinach is good. No, I usually do spinach too.
I make really good omelets, by the way.
Yeah, I'm down with eggs.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for our podcast. It's somehow got to be an hour and a half long. You can see that coming. No, just kidding. It's like 57 minutes. We're fine. Thanks for everybody for listening, subscribing, rating, and reviewing. We'll be back tomorrow with the Brady Quinn Football Show. Oh yeah. In the meantime, there you go. It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.